Lowestoft is Britain's most easterly point, and closer to continental Europe than to London. Lowestoft is a place with a distinctive heritage, and for 1,000 years or more has been shaped by the sea. Colin Dixon, chairman of the Lowestoft Maritime Museum, tells us about the museum and Lowestoft's maritime history.
In 1958, the Lowestoft Marine Society, as it was then called, was formed by a group of enthusiasts who were keen to preserve the maritime history of the port of Lowestoft. Those early enthusiasts include the well-known Oulton Broad harbour master, Bill Solomon. That band of men collected, borrowed, and by a few other means, built up a collection of marine artefacts that started the museum we have today. In the 1950s/60s, the Lowestoft fishing industry, the shipbuilding industry, and all associated trades were still very active in the port, and many of those trades supported the museum. Those early founder members put on displays of the collection in various venues in the town. Shop windows became places to promote the then small organisation. Its popularity grew, and so did the collection, and it was rather fortuitous that the small park keeper's cottage in Sparrow's Nest Park became available to the society. That was in 1968, and the four rooms of the cottage were soon made ready to show off the collection of fishing and other maritime items to the general public. By this time, the society had changed its name to the Lowestoft and East Suffolk Maritime Society, the name we go by today. The collection continued to grow, and the members decided to show off the rapidly increasing collection and that the museum should be extended. Plans were drawn up and fundraising began in earnest in 1977. And the extension was to cost £10,000, this huge sum being raised by the members in all manner of ways. The extension on completion by the builders was fitted out entirely by the members, as the funds only allowed enough cash for the building work. This extension, called the Bill Solomon Room, was opened in 1978 by His Royal Highness Prince Philip. His Royal Highness had been shipmates with Commander Ralph Jenkins, who was the museum president at the time, and used his influence to get His Royal Highness down to open the collection. The collection, still growing, needed more room, and so another small extension, referred to as the picture gallery, was added in 1980 and was opened by Lady Mayhew, the famous Broads yachtswoman. It was at the turn of the century, the then chairman, Peter Parker, suggested plans for a large extension, one that would almost double the size of the museum. And over the ensuing years, plans were drawn up and lease changes with Waveney District Council, the owners of the cottage, were discussed. But most important of all, an application to the Heritage Lottery Fund was made. This was to be a very long and stressful time for those concerned. Years, not months. However, the efforts of all those involved with the lottery application was rewarded when a grant of over £340,000 was awarded to the museum. It had taken a decade of hard work. That grant allowed us to double the size and set out a museum that would take us into the 21st century. The result of the hard work and determination is what the visitor can see today. The maritime industry in Lowestoft is now very much a shadow of its former self, and that is why a band of volunteers are dedicated to keeping alive this vast collection of maritime artefacts for future generations and to show them Lowestoft's maritime heritage. The museum was officially reopened in 2010 by Her Royal Highness Princess Anne. And according to our visitor book, comments like, "One of the best museums in this part of England," are frequently recorded. And as I'm speaking to you now, many of the helpers are busy making sure that we are still one of the best museums in this part of England. We close for the winter from the half-term holiday in October until Good Friday. So we have the whole of the winter period. And I can tell you that our volunteers, the group of volunteers who make up the working party, must be dedicated, because it's jolly cold down there in the middle of the winter, I can tell you. But they continue and doing all sorts of things. Mainly it's to maintain the collection in its tip-top condition. Nice and crisp, the glass and all the cabinets and the models are dusted and everything like that. But occasionally we have to have major work done, and this particular close down, we've got a team of men in there insulating the roof, because like most things, we have advisors, and one of them, a conservator who we paid to give us our collection, the rubber stamp of approval, has come up with a lot of things like these consultants usually do, saying, can we do this and can we do that? And we need to do it. And one of them is to insulate the roof. So that's an ongoing thing. I don't know how many of you have perhaps visited the Sparrow's Nest Park, but you'll find that we are not very far from the sea, and there is an ever concern that flood, especially in the winter months, that floods could overwhelm us a little bit, like they have done on two occasions. We've now fitted up, or have done now for a couple of years or so or more, flood protection for the winter period. The summer doesn't seem to have the high tide effect as the winter did. I don't know if people can remember. I certainly can. I'm old enough to remember 1953 floods, when the whole of the East Coast was affected. And we've got a marker on the wall outside how high the tide came, and which was pretty high. The museum covers not only just the fishing industry, but I did mention earlier on the shipbuilding industry. Lowestoft's shipbuilding industry was, I think, second to none. I would say that because I served an apprenticeship in the shipyard. And we've been fortunate enough to have various artifacts from the shipyards brought to us and put into our collection. And we're still open to people adding to our collection. Every year we have many, many people come in and saying, "Oh yes, my granddad had one of those and I think it's in our shed. Would you like it?" And that's the way we keep maintaining the collection. We have a small section on the World War I and II, but it's in the park, the Sparrow's Nest Park. There is another museum, the Royal Naval Patrol Service, who take care of the naval aspect of Lowestoft. So we don't have too much to overlap with them. But there's a section on the hovercraft, which is something which we were very proud to have. When Sir Christopher Cockerell, as he became, when he moved all the collection from Summerleighton, his daughter contacted us and said, "Would we like to have the collection of his workshop?" And so the museum has a dedicated workshop to Christopher Cockerill, which was a bit of a coup, I think, to get that. We also believe in having education, because young people, museums are necessary. They needn't be boring, but they need to be interactive, and we like to think that the young people who come in can do that. We liaise with schools. We do have schools come in, and we have people. In fact, I was out a few weeks before Christmas. I was at the local school giving them a talk on Lowestoft fishing industry. The fishing industry in Lowestoft was one of the main industries, where they smoked the herrings, and thousands upon thousands of herring were landed on the fish market at Lowestoft. And sadly, today, there are none. That is why it's important that Lowestoft Maritime Museum is there, as far as I'm concerned. And we're very happy for people to support us in many ways. Our admission fees are not very much, because we believe that if people want to add to it, they can. I was mentioned earlier on about our collection of artefacts, and one of the major parts of our model displays was given to us by a Mr. Alan Thurston's family. Mr. Thurston was a model maker, and when I say a model maker, it's incredible the number of models that he turned out without any drawings. He actually made them by eye, which when the models, there are 20 vessels recorded, shown on in the museum, and they range from sailing smacks to steam powered vessels, both herring, drifters and trawler. He began making models as a boy in 1930, which I find incredible, with a sixpenny, not old, not new money, sixpence, with chisel, which he got, and some scrap material. And he became a keen model maker all his life. And when he died, and his wish was that the things come to the Maritime Museum, which we were very proud of, we had to get a lorry, a large van, to go down. And I can't remember where he lived now, but they went down and collected them. And they're on display. And if any of you would like to visit, we will do our best to give an audio a description of what is in the museum and guide you around. But you would have to contact the museum, I think, in fairness, when we are open, to ask if it would be possible to have a guide, because saying that you are visually handicapped. And I'd be delighted to do that. In fact, we have done it on many occasions. Lowestoft, although I was on about fishing industry and the shipbuilding and industry, it didn't always have a harbour, which is difficult to believe. The inland waterways of the River Waveney and Alton Broad came within 2 miles of the sea, and there was no link between them. Instead, sailing smacks landed and sold their catch of fish on the beach. Bigger ships also dried out on the sand, and they were offloaded the cargo in the usual way. But in 1827, all that began to change. Shipping companies wanted to establish Lowestoft and Norwich as trading ports, and dredged a deep water channel to link Alton Broad by river to Norwich. And that was in 1831. They put a channel across the beach to connect Lake Lothing, which is why it was called a lake, and It's connected to the sea. And Lowestoft officially became a port. Later on, a few years, became connected by railway by Sir Morton Peto. So Norwich was linked to the sea, and that was one of the things that Peto said, you could have fresh fish all the way up to Manchester if you wanted to. That was one of the good things about Peto's, well, Lake Lothian, if you like. He was the one who made the harbour. Another interesting feature of the Lowestoft is, of course, we were the first to have a lighthouse as such, and Samuel Pepys was the man who established the lighthouse. He worked when he was one of the elder brethren of Trinity House, and so that's interesting. And we not only had one, but we had two lighthouses. One was where the present lighthouse is and still is there from 1600 and something, and it's not the same building, but it's the same site. And then down on the beach, when I say the beach, I mean the sandy beach, they put another one so that ships could line the two up, and that would give that they knew they were going to go into harbour and not go on the sandbank. And that was another thing. We have a good collection in our collection. We have a good display of lifeboats and life-saving equipment. Again, it's a port which was, Lowestoft as a port, needed to have life-saving equipment. And one of the benefactors of the first lifeboat in Lowestoft was not the RNLI, but was Mr. Sparrow of Sparrow's Nest. He was one of the benefactors. One of the artefacts I find very interesting is the Prunia Trophy. The Prunia Trophy is a very tactile trophy, and it is made of Purbeck marble. It is about 12 inches, something like that, 12 inches, 14 inches. Extremely heavy, and it is of a hand holding a herring. And the award was given by Madame Prunier, who was a French restaurateur, and she had a fish restaurant in London. And she was amazed that people didn't eat herring. So she decided that she would give a trophy to the boat which brought in the highest catch for one night at sea. And she got this trophy made of Purbeck marble. And every year from a certain time, when the fishing was at its best here in Lowestoft and Great Yarmouth, which was October through to December, she would present this trophy at the end of the fishing season to the boat with the highest catch. This went on quite well. Obviously, it didn't go on during the war, but it went on after the war, and she gave a trophy to each of the crew members and the skipper. They would have, in the museum, there is a case with the various silver articles which the Prunia Trophy recipients got.
We have been listening to Colin Dixon, Chairman of the Lowestoft Maritime Museum.